Hi everyone, and welcome to Speak Free. And actually, we've got a really important topic. It's one that's been discussed quite a bit at the moment since the current government is, well, suggesting that charities, particularly churches, should be taxed, that they need to have income tax. And everyone knows about Destiny Church and Sanitarium and Mission Wines and all of this. But actually, there was academic, and we're about to meet and chat with her, who's just released a report. And the headline in the press release was "Atheist Academic Changes Her Mind on Churches' Tax-Free Status and Calls, in fact, for a Task Force to Empower Them." And what caught me, amongst many elements, and we're going to bring her on in a moment, she says, "Without churches, New Zealand would plunge into irreversible poverty and chaos overnight. And if anything, churches should pay less tax and receive more government assistance." So I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Juliet Chevalier Watts. Welcome along.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And yes, I do appear to be quite a controversial character, really, don't I, doing this?
Oh, well, we can sort of play snap on that. I try to do a little bit of controversy myself. So look, you're obviously the person behind the report, but important for our viewers and listeners to know, you are an associate professor in the Faculty of Law there at Waikato University, and you have specialised into charity law, trusts and the like over many, many years. So you're an expert in this space, Juliet, if I could be so informal.
Yeah, absolutely. Please, Juliet, absolutely, 100% that. Yes, I am an expert in this area, and charity law has taken up like the last 15 years of my life, basically. I fell into it completely by chance when I came to New Zealand. Suddenly found it absolutely fascinating in a way that I could never have conceived would have happened. And so I consider charity law. I consider charity law generally from all of the purposes that there are, the legally recognized purposes. So there is four of those. In New Zealand, you've got relief of poverty, advancement of education, advancement of religion, which is the one that's been capturing the headlines, and any other purposes beneficial to the community. And so I can concentrate on all of those. But as the time was going on, because of my absolute lack of faith and thinking that churches and religion was frankly a waste of time as far as society was concerned, because I'm atheist, I began to find myself drawn in to religious charities and how on earth we could still justify their existence. And I decided that I was going to do a PhD, and I was originally going to do it in another topic of law, charity law, but then I was like, no, let's do religious charities, and I will set about disproving that or considering how they really can't be justified any longer in New Zealand. So it turned out that my hypothesis was fundamentally flawed.
But this is refreshing. Can I just say this is refreshing to hear? Because I would make the argument that some academic work now is very much here's a hypothesis or premise, and I'm going to do everything to prove it. And in many ways, it almost happens in reverse. Here's the conclusion, and I'll work towards it. This is refreshing that, as you say, you've started out with a hypothesis, with a motivation for it, if I might, and you've gone, oh,
100%,
actually.
yes, I know. And I can tell you, I was a very conflicted woman when I was writing this. So, just imagine that your whole ethos has suddenly been undermined by your research. And I was like, well, look, I can't change what I found. This is law. This is socioeconomic stuff that I'm finding. It's objective evidence. It was criticized by the examiners. It was my supervisors were rigorous with it as well. And interesting, one of my supervisors at the time, he sadly passed, Sir Grant Hammond, he strongly recommended, he's ex-Court of Appeal judge for anyone that doesn't know who he is, who was. He strongly recommended to me. And when Sir Grant strongly recommends something, you generally do it. He strongly recommended that one of my chapters should look at what would happen if religious charities no longer existed. And I went, huh, okay, let's have a look at that. And there's hardly any research on it. People just haven't really considered it because religious charities have existed since time immemorial. Biblical times talk about religious charities. So we had this. I had this issue about how can I even find this stuff out. So the US had got some really interesting stuff coming out of it in 2016 by an author by the name of Brian Grimm and his daughter Melissa Grimm, and they looked at how much religious charities were worth to the US economy, right? 2016 alone, they were worth $1.2 trillion just in that one year alone. That at the time was worth more than Apple, Amazon, and a whole bunch of oil and gas companies. And I was like, oh, well, that's
That's
America.
the States, yeah.
Correct. They are very religious. And I was thinking, oh, that won't be the same elsewhere. My hypothesis, yet again, you think I learned my lesson by now. Brian J. Groom also did the same in Canada, which is said to be a post-religious country, so very secular in many ways. And it was worked out, much smaller population, that religious charities are worth 67 billion Canadian dollars. Just for one year, 2018, which will have changed dramatically by now,
Well,
upwards.
it's almost though just a bit short of actually New Zealand's total GDP, just to give listeners a bit of
I
a
know, I
sense.
know. Bonkers. Australia did the same, led by Keith Thompson, professor in Australia, worked out that Australia, it was a little bit changing data, but between 20, sorry, 10 and 21 billion Australian dollars for a small population, again, a country that is not religious by any stretch of the imagination. I was like, okay, what has New Zealand done about this? And it turns out nobody has checked what has happened with regards to religious charities in New Zealand. Nobody knows what they're worth. We've got some vague guesses somewhere. So I decided that we needed to do something about that. So I got my PhD. Proudly call myself a doctor, but I still didn't know exactly what religious charities were worth to New Zealand. And I couldn't do it alone because I do law, not maths. So I needed the assistance of somebody else who could help me with that, and called in a professor by the name of Frank Scrimgeour, who works for the University of Waikato. He heads up financing and accounts in the Waikato Management School, utterly brilliant at maths and finance. So our initial
That's good to hear, by the way, with an economist. I'm just going to put that out there. It's good to hear. It's good to hear.
I know. Sorry, you cannot trust me with figures. I do law. I'm all right at that, but he is utterly brilliant at that. So our initial research, which takes huge amount of time because you're analyzing, getting the data, analyzing the data, which is all available, by the way, publicly on the charity services website. So it's not like anybody is missing out on that data. They can go and find it for themselves if they wish to. I can tell you they probably won't, but it's there. And so what our initial research has demonstrated in 2018, and we selected 2018 very specifically to start off because it was just before COVID. And then once COVID hit, all charities were impacted terribly by that. So we will do post-COVID, but that's taking a lot of work yet. So what New Zealand's religious charities were worth just for 2018 alone, bear in mind how small our population is, that we are a secular country. 6.1 billion New Zealand dollars. That was an astonishing amount. And it kind of blew my mind, to be honest, that here's me going, religious charities, we don't need them anymore. And I went, okay, what else is behind this? Because of note is that we could only capture a certain amount of those dollar values. So looking at things like employees, volunteers, some of the services they offer, but it turns out the majority of their work is not captured. And not for any nefarious reason, but just because, as what's that phrase used, at that saying in New Zealand, the kumara does not speak of its own sweetness.
Oh, yes.
Religious charities, religions per se, do not speak of their own sweetness. I have been traipsing up and down New Zealand in the last 2 years, talking endlessly to religious bodies, religious leaders, people within the religious entities, going, what do you do? Tell me about what you do, doing questionnaires. And they have told me some amazing stuff that almost brings tears to your eyes listening to it. And I'm like, who knows about this? They go, well, we do. And I'm like, no, that's not good enough. People have to know about this.
I think it's probably, I mean, laying my cards on the table, I'm very concerned about this move by the government, even though we don't have all the details, but even the intention
Oh, I
worries me.
am
And I
too.
think,
Enormously concerned. Yeah.
I think part of what the government's going to rely on is actually the humility or the quiet of these churches. What they do, and I've been involved directly over the years myself, we just do it quietly. It's just sort of part of the mission,
I
but they're going to
know,
rely
stop
on that.
doing that.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's share the stories, because I'd also make the point, and feel free to correct me on this, that a lot of religious charities do get monetary support and volunteer support from atheistic or secular people as well. It's, you don't have to be a believer, but it's the
No,
conduit for a lot of
that's right.
charitable work.
And also, a lot of non-religious people then get the help. It is not just religious people that they help. They help all walks of life. So yesterday I was in Wellington talking to the National New Zealand Church leaders. It was their meeting and I was invited to talk to them. And they got a bit of a browbeating from me because, bless them, they were very interested in what I had to say. And they took it well, I have to say. They didn't pray for me because obviously they realised that was a
All
pointless.
right. They might have done so secretly later, we don't know, but I suppose they have to take criticism with grace. It's part of
Yes,
their calling.
they absolutely did. And I told them that they needed to promote themselves. And they said, but we kind of do. And I went, but to your own people. It's people like me that need to hear this. And one of them, I won't say who it was because he probably wants to stay anonymous. He said, there were lots of men there, so you'd never be able to work out who it was. He said that one of their churches has a number of visitors every week that just drop in. And these people are on the streets. They have nothing, literally nothing. Many of them are suicidal. And their only chance to talk to people, to have a warm human conversation, is at that church where somebody without any judgment, doesn't matter who is listening to them, they will just go, I don't care what religion you are, I don't care if you have no belief at all, I'll listen to you. And some of these people have said that's the only thing that's kept them on this planet. And I went, who knows this? And he went, I do.
Yeah. Oh, it's an aside, but I remember working with the homeless, and one of my early insights is why some of them literally are yelling or screaming at people on the street.
Yeah,
It's some of the only interactions
that's
that
right.
they have. They're ignored by society. But
Yeah.
you're indicating quite clearly, not only is there an enormous amount of charitable work, particularly, not exclusively, but particularly through the Christian churches,
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah.
and it's enormous amounts of money, as you say, 6 point. Is that the taxable amount, or that's the total amount that's been
That's
spent?
the total amount
Okay.
that has been input to the state basically through volunteer hours, through employment, through some of the services they carry out.
And so obviously there's a push. Again, we don't know all the details, we just know intention to tax,
Yeah.
that this
The
the
intention,
income
yeah,
needs to be taxed.
it appears that it's going to be on, at this stage, unrelated business activities. There's no definition of what that would mean. And how do you know that something would not be something would be an unrelated business activity? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's failed, says me to you. And again, you're the expert. I'm just a former politician who's got an opinion on everything. But
Right.
America tried this, I think, in the 40s or 50s. It didn't work, because, as you say, how do you define? But I suppose that my critical point, and it'd be interesting to tease it out through your research. I mean, if at the end of the day the government takes any money off the charity's profit, that's transferring the money that would have been used to help, like the homeless person you just suggested,
Yeah,
and giving it to the government. And
that's
governments
right.
don't do things efficiently.
No, so okay, let's take that point in that case. So say that that money went to the government, there would be a department that that money would go to, and there would be a senior leader that goes, right, who do we need to help with this money? Who knows what needs to be done there? So somebody would have to go and find that out, that they have to be paid for. Whereas actually, very invariably, the church has known exactly who needs to be helped. And for one person that works for the church and gets paid for the church, they will have on average six volunteers helping them. So, and the person who's paid for the church will be paid at a much lower rate than a for-profit entity. So what you're getting, bang for buck, that's the right way around. Yes, you are getting a huge amount of money there for carrying out work That needs to be done, has to be done. That is literally saving lives in so many ways that the government thinks that they're going to take from them. And I don't understand how this can be justified because the government doesn't know how much it will cost churches, religious entities, all other charities. What will happen? I can tell you immediately they will lose 6.1 billion New Zealand dollars.
I think they're going to rely on that quiet humility that we touched on earlier. I mean, I've talked to different church leaders around the country, not as probably comprehensively as you, but I've said, look, if the government goes ahead with this, shut down, close down for a couple of weeks and let the state, let the crown understand what they're getting. Because I don't, at the moment, I just think it's a money grab, to be honest. And I think the other point, and again, speaking with a political hat on, the government's not wanting to tax charities to say, look, we're going to take X percent of your money and we will do the charitable work. They just want the money.
Just it, that's what it appears to me, that it just appears to be a charitable, it appears to be, as you said, a revenue raising scheme. And there was a publication by the government yesterday or the day before, I don't recall, that basically said there's not really going to be much in the budget with regard to any changes except for charities. So is this just a fait accompli? That the consulting paper, consultancy paper that's gone out, is everything, they're all the responses on there, are they going to be taken note of? Because I know some very eminent people that have responded to it with real actual evidence of the damage that will occur if income tax is placed on charities, even if it's this unrelated business activity, whatever that might mean.
So the argument is, though, that these churches in particular running charities are getting an unfair advantage. They should be paying their fair share. Render unto Caesar, some would-be theologians have tried to tell me that, it's just not fair. It's just not fair. I mean, from your research, why is it fair that they don't pay taxes?
Okay, so this is not a legal loophole that they're getting away with all this huge amounts of money that they have stashed away somewhere. Let me give you the reality of it. So if you are a registered, so in order to register as a charity, you have to undergo a very stringent process. It can take up to 12 weeks for your purposes, your documents, everything to be reviewed from a legal perspective, from an administrative perspective. Once you then get charitable status, oh, you then have to comply with ensuring that all your purposes meet legal requirements, that you're constantly meeting public benefit, that you have to provide all of your accounts every single year. And talking to one of the people yesterday about what it takes to provide that information, it is takes them hour upon hour upon hour to get everything legally correct. No for-profit has to do that. There is no requirement for them to undertake such significant or to be so scrutinized as so the scrutiny is there. Now, on top of that, they've got to carry out their good works. And so those good works take up the majority of their time, also trying to fundraise because people aren't wandering up to them going, have $1,000. That doesn't happen like that. They have to beg and scrounge and plead for that money. And we know this. People who go to church, they're not going to be able to give them $1,000 at the end of the church service and go, thank you very much. There might be a fiver. People are poor. So nobody is getting huge amounts of money, but the construct about people earning money from charities, they're being businesses. The legal requirement is that nobody in a charity can make a private pecuniary gain as a result of money, of business. What it has to do legally, that money is required to go and support those charitable purposes. There are no shareholders that are knocking on their door saying, where's all our money? None of that. What you've got are beneficiaries who've got roofs over their head, food in their belly. So, and anybody can go and review those accounts to make sure they
Oh,
are.
it's very public.
100%. Unfortunately, nobody ever realizes that. So charities are a very different model from businesses. So invariably, those that head up the charities, they will not be paid as well, generally, as those in for-profit companies. And
And we all know a number of people who actually start in the charitable sector who eventually get headhunted into sometimes even corporate roles. But it's not taken away from their motives. But the money is much, much better outside of the charitable sector by and large.
yeah, that's right. Already charities are having to struggle to compete for grants, for handouts. So I know there's this competition construct that, oh, because they're all getting all this free money because they don't have to pay tax. Well, they do have to pay certain taxes, they're not fully tax exempt on everything. It's just not the case. And many of these charities are grassroots, with people who are not experts in tax, in law, in how to run a business. So I would always argue that a charity really should be run as a business, but people, these mum and dad grassroots charities are going, I don't know how to do that. I don't
No.
know how to do it.
And in a strange way, we don't really want them to. Well, says me, because I've noticed over the years, actually, not just with not-for-profits, but even NGOs, that they spend an increasing and inordinate time doing regulatory requirements, be it,
Yes.
it's just accounts were one example, but you want them out there doing the good works at the soup kitchen or the homeless or whatever it is.
100%.
But I suppose one, and it's a an argument of nomenclature and wording. People, particularly those who want to tax the churches, and we might get to their real motivation soon, but they often talk about the profits. All these profits go untaxed. And to me, Juliet, it is a profit at one level, but those dollars made from a business, doesn't matter if it's a little hospice shop or sanitarium, is going to charitable
Correct.
purposes.
They have to, by law, they have to. And it really became very apparent in COVID times how appallingly charities then suffered as a result, because people hid away, rightly so, they were supposed to. They were losing money left, right, and centre. People weren't employed, and their employers couldn't necessarily pay them. There was some money coming from the government, but people lost homes, they lost their marriages. And they went, we can't support a charity. So some charities just fell over as a result because they didn't have profits they could squirrel away for a rainy day. COVID was a rainy day. And I would absolutely advocate for charities to make some profit and hang on to it just for a little bit, just to in order to pay for that roof that needs repairing, to make sure that your property is earthquake proof. Because who's going to help with that? Well, no, you've got to do it yourself. All of these things, and COVID showed us that. So, and the law says that those profits at some point have to go back into that charity. They're not paying the shareholders or anything like that. Nothing happens like that. We said they
And
support.
again, that's a key point for me. And in some ways, I'm repeating where I went earlier, but it just wanting to get into people's mind that when the government takes some of that profit, in inverted commas, they're taking away the very money that is used transparently, being reported on to help New Zealanders. And I suppose the rhetorical question to listeners is, do they really think any government of the day is going to spend that better? And if I might, Juliet, you highlighted one point early on. Most charities have a lot of volunteers. The public service, I can tell you, has no one who volunteers at all, at all.
So actually, charities are doing it so much cheaper than the government will do. And surely the public would be interested in hearing that their tax money, that their money, their hard-earned money is being spent in a much more economical manner than handing it to a whole bunch of people in government to try to work out who needs helping. Well, will the government help somebody who can't pay for a funeral for their loved one? I know religions that will do that, and the government doesn't know about them. So those people would have to go into debt to pay to say goodbye to their loved one. And I'm sorry, that's not appropriate.
No, I think there's actually a bit of a paradox, and please, this is a political point coming from me, but we have a current government on a centre right that talks about smaller government, less regulation, less interference, and yet here they're specifically proposing to get more involved and to actually interfere into the church space in particular, in the charity space, and we'll do it less efficiently. I mean, so much. I'm thinking of housing, for example. Certainly, when I used to be a shadow minister for social housing, we all wanted NGOs to get involved and not Housing New Zealand because we knew they were more efficient. And
That's
yet,
right.
here we've got the opposite.
It makes no sense to me. The only way in which I can rationalize it is they want the money. And I do kind of understand that because the country is a bit broke. So it kind
A
of
bit broke.
makes a bit broke. I know,
Sorry.
I'm kind of underestimating there, aren't I? So it does kind of make sense to me that you try to gain revenue where you can, but it has to be a sensible revenue gain. It cannot be at the expense of those who are already poor and suffering, which is exactly what is going to happen. And this is why I am urging religious charities and churches to go, this is what we do, and this is how we do it. And
Do
I'm
you feel
hoping
though
that.
there's, oh, sorry.
No, go on.
Do you feel though there's, this is not becoming a rational discussion in public discourse, as in, let's look at the advantages, what's happening, how much money might be raised, how might it be spread? When I read some of the commentary, it to me seems fueled by basically a disdain of particularly Christian churches and charities, which is why commentators delight in having a crack, rightly to a degree, on destiny and their behaviors. But there's a disdain of faith here, and that seems to be driving a lot of the desire and narrative, in my opinion.
Think you're right, actually. I had a question asked of me yesterday by one of the New Zealand church leaders, and he asked, why are we losing our faith? I said, well, I'm Generation X. And so I was abandoned by my parents from a very early age and had to look after myself, etc. You know, typical Generation X stuff. And I said, I was forced to go to church when I was little, and I hated it, absolutely hated it. It felt like an obligation, didn't want to do it. And I moved away from that as quickly as I could. I moved in circles where nobody went to church, nobody was religious, and people within those communities therefore didn't pass on any sort of religious construct or notion, certainly to their children or whatever it might be. And I said, so we don't necessarily have this heritage now of people from my generation and downwards of being religious or having this, and instead we've got people like me being atheists going, why does religion even exist? And I've had to be disproven. I even disprove myself rather awkwardly because of my research. But there's not many people like that out there, like me, who will do that research. It's easy to hang on to the Destiny Churches of this world. And you know what? Just because Destiny Church, it comes across as controversial at times, and I certainly do not condone any violence or anything that occurs, and they should absolutely feel the full force of the law if people were hurt for any destruction, etc. But the world is full of controversy, and there have been endless controversial charities starting from back in the day. For instance, there were charities that wished to end slavery, and you can potentially imagine how unpopular those charities were. People would lose millions and millions of dollars and pounds no longer having slaves. And people were outraged that they would no longer have slaves. But yet that was a charity. We would look at it now and go, how could that be controversial? Women's movement. That was enormously controversial charities. You know, women were accused of being a whole range of things, mad, and that we would lose our minds having been given the vote, all of these sorts of things. More recently, we had the rainbow community saying, we want to have same-sex marriage, or marriage, as I like to call it. And the controversy that was attached and still is attached to the rainbow community charities. So, yes, sometimes religious charities attract controversiality. But I think that detracts from actually what those charities do, from what those churches do for their communities overall. We just like to pick on easy targets.
I agree. And the point of charities is not whether people agree or not. I mean, you referenced effectively Wilberforce and slavery. I mean, he was
Yes, that's right.
also the proponent of the SPCA. The
Yes.
protection of animals was another, if you will, charitable thing
Oh,
he started, which would have been controversial at the time. So Yeah, charities are not to that space. And look, I don't want to, for the sake of time, delve too much into destiny, because like you, I don't like the violent behavior. But
No.
maybe I'll phrase it as a question. But we don't need to use the charities law to punish. There's something called criminal law.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, there is also charity law that would state that if something is contrary to public policy or will bring something into disrepute, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but a charity can lose its charitable status. Of course it can. And on top of that, then you have criminal law. You also have tortious law, you know, for assault and battery and defamation, all of these things that exist alongside. So there are avenues of recourse to ensure that people are held accountable. And I think it's just an easy argument, actually, that somebody looks at a figure that promotes controversy. We've done it for eons with people, of course we have. It makes easy headlines and it's lazy journalism, to be honest.
Lazy politics as well, but
I've just
I'm pleased you
insulted
used
the
the
whole.
word scapegoating.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, it is. And at no point do I want people to think that I condone any of the violence or the threats or anything like that that took place. Absolutely, I do not. But I think we need to look much more broadly. And actually, can we not just promote the charity sector for once, as opposed to going, it's terrible and we need to change it? No, we don't. We absolutely do not.
Well, your research went further, as I read the press release, to say actually there should be even more exemptions or space for charities to work. And I do want to just touch on that scapegoating side, because it's one of the things that's really concerned me is, yeah, first and foremost, looking to use charity law or the use of taxation to punish or reward people. It's like, whoa, who gets to choose that? And the second element is the constant, we've mentioned destiny, we've touched on sanitarium. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but the politicians and the media just keep coming back to a couple of examples, which I would suggest are misunderstood. But there are so many charities. Sanitarium and destiny, if I might phrase it this way, do not make up the, sorry, are not the majority of the $6.1 billion that you've referenced.
No, they are not. Absolutely, they are not. But interestingly, okay, let's go back to Destiny. Do we actually know what they do? I do a little bit. I understand one of their programs, Man Up, and also their youth network. Man Up literally saves men's lives. So it is there to empower men who are. So our suicide rates in New Zealand are appalling.
Amongst
And
the highest in the world, particularly
that's right.
young white men. It's terrible.
Correct. And our incarceration of men is terrible here. Man Up, however, seeks to change that, and they have done with hundreds and hundreds of men because Destiny Church has the community. They know the people in the community. They know how to reach out to them. They know how to reach out to them appropriately, not some white person coming in on a white horse going, I will save you. No,
This is
nobody.
very appropriate with someone with the name Chevalier, by the
Exactly,
way,
I
you know,
know.
speaking white.
I thought I'd get that in there somehow. So,
Well,
and sanitarium, the work that they do, especially in the Pacific Islands, of providing, they're the first ones in there when there's a disaster, they're the last ones out, providing houses. Who provides houses? Government sure as hell ain't doing that. They provide food, they provide clothing, loans, you name it. And it's not like their products are even any cheaper in the supermarkets. Go and have a look at sanitarium products. They are equal. People can choose not to buy sanitarium if they don't want to. Nobody's forcing them to.
again, these are some of the, I would suggest, absurdest arguments are out there. Oh, well, they get this advantage. I'm going, really? When I bought the Weet-Bix, didn't seem that cheap compared to other brands. And also, if I might, parents in particular listening who are all gung-ho for taxing the churches might want to think about the likes of the Weet-Bix triathlon, you know, which
Correct.
thousands of New Zealand young school kids get to
Correct.
participate in. I wonder, sort of, it's more of a philosophical question, and I know you're in the legal profession, but part of the arguments at time is always the separation of church and state. Now, I could spend hours expanding on why that's a weird idea and trope, but anyway, there's always the talk we must separate the church and state. Yet, to me, Juliet, it looks like the state is trying to deliberately get into the church and charity space here by forcing
Controlling.
a taxation on them. I mean, have I missed something here?
No, I think you're quite right. I have two minds about separating church and state. And I think it actually is appropriate in some regards to have church or religious input into the state, not least because our entire white part of the country was founded on religion, basically. So much of our heritage from the colonial times, obviously I'm excluding Māoridom from this, and I apologize about that. But so much of our institutes, our schools, our governments has its basis in Christianity. And the law does not sit in isolation. Government doesn't sit in isolation. Policies don't sit in isolation. All of them are impacted by various elements of society. That includes religion, whether we like it or not. And religions exist, and they need to be more than existing. They need to be welcomed, and they need to be supported to carry out and continue to do their good works. So the government needs to interact with them, I think, to understand that. Or me and my colleague Frank Scrimgeour.
I absolutely agree with that interaction. I'm always just struck at times thinking again, it's more the political debates. Oh, the church shouldn't have an opinion, get out of the way. And yet here we have the government deliberately wanting to insert itself in and again
That's right.
take the money. Julian, I am exceptionally conscious of your time, and I'm also aware you're doing the rounds with media. This has really set off a welcome storm, and I think a really good reflection into what is actually happening. And if I might just to echo your call to the various charities out there that are listening or people involved, speak about what you're doing, increase that social
100%.
license.
Yeah, 100%. Nobody else is going to speak of your sweetness. So
No, back to the Coomera.
back to the Coomera as ever. Simon, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for your research. And also, can I just say thank you for speaking to it into public. I think that's in itself refreshing as to someone who goes in with an academic hypothesis or thesis and is quite prepared to change. So thanks for your time. And everyone, that was Dr. Juliet Chevalier Watts. She's an associate professor of law at the University of Waikato.
Thank you.